broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network. This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
Ah, yes, and a fine Friday morning, Friday evening, Saturday, next Tuesday. To all of you Bolts Nation, whenever it is you do listen to the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, I am so ever grateful. My name is Tom Lang. How are you feeling today? Concerned? Angry? Pleased? Somewhere in the middle? Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think we've gone on a bit of a roller coaster this past week. All together with four games and 8 points available to us. We pick up 6 of those points, but it's the 2 we didn't pick up that would leave us concerned, I would think, about what it is we are or aren't as we head to the postseason. And that's where we'll begin today on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. Housekeeping details later, of course. We'll give you those details of how to get us on demand. But I welcome you into another edition. And this Lightning team can be maddening at times. We talked about this last week in the second segment, and it was a discussion about complacency as it related to the Lightning in the last 4 or 5 seasons and what creeps into our game. We'll have that discussion again because I kind of understand the mindset a little bit more after a troubling press availability after our loss to Boston. That's where this all started, right? You guys are feeling good. It's St. Patrick's Day, a Saturday night at Amalie Arena, and a matchup of 2 playoff teams. Perhaps 2 teams that will be facing off in the second round of these Eastern Conference playoffs coming up in just a few short weeks. And the Lightning lay an egg. Boston's defensive structure, outstanding. Doesn't matter how many players they have banged up. They could have 3 or 4 superstars, or stars for their team, not available. They outcompete, they outwork, they outplay, and they outscore the Bolts. Now, there are a few exceptions. I'd say the back half of the hockey game, the Lightning played pretty well. I think lines 3 and 4 showed consistency and effort. In fact, some of our best shifts, I can think of one in the first period, it's the 3rd and 4th line guys cycling around and taking the ice back a little bit. It was so tilted in Boston's favor that you just were stunned. Unless you weren't and you saw what the Lightning was doing heading into that Saturday and playing inconsistent and not up to the playoff caliber necessary to go on a 6-week run. Again, you know, this podcast is very simple, the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. I don't want to get lost in the shuffle of the ups and downs of a regular season. That's too easy. I only do this once a week, too. It's about a cup run. If this was a young team that, oh, finally, after 3 or 4 years of losing seasons, we're turning around, expectations are different. Expectations are such that, well, let's see if we can make some noise in the postseason. But that's not what the Bolts are. That's not what we've been for the last 2 or 3 seasons. That's why last year stung so much when we didn't make the playoffs. This is a team that's capable of beating anybody and would be picked to beat just about anybody, especially when we're all healthy, right? So I look at this every week as how does our game stack up against what's necessary? How does our game stack up against our potential? And we were lacking Saturday night. Didn't come away with the big 2 points. In fact, Boston has to be feeling pretty good about its chances. They've gone on to lose in overtime to St. Louis earlier this week, and they have a big game tonight, Friday night as I'm taping this. But they're 6 points back of the Bolts, and they got 2 games in hand. But they do have a leg up on Tampa Bay, head-to-head. We'll see if next week, when we play Boston, we can change and flip the script. But as for last Saturday night, just not good enough. It's just not good enough. It was one of those comprehensive beatdowns in this sense. Again, Boston defensively played so well and was so stifling, it felt like we had 3 or 4 legitimate chances at scoring. That's the kind of game that you're going to see in April, and you got to be prepared for. The good news is it's not. It was St. Patrick's Day. So you got time. And I can understand the sentiment if you're like somebody who responded to me on Twitter over the weekend at _TomLang saying, don't ask for the Lightning to, you know, tucker itself out just to win a President's Cup or win the division. I can understand that line of thinking because, like I said last week, it's 82 games, and if you give max effort every single night, well, you'll have nothing left. But I will say this, if the team itself leading up to Saturday says that the Boston game is a measuring stick game, clearly that means it has the game circled, right? We all know this happens. I mean, think about last night's win over the Islanders. It's a 7-6 final. We go up 4-1. We go up 7-3. We think the game's over twice. It's not either time. But that's not an effort level that we're going to require of ourselves come April. It just isn't. The Islanders didn't play with that desperation either until they got the game to 7-4, 7-5 in the third period. They noted it on the TV broadcast. Also, an awesome moment on the TV broadcast I'll share with you in a little bit, but they noted it on the TV broadcast. You know, the pressure the Islanders are putting on the Lightning at their own blue line is nil. This is the easiest time the Bolts have had in a long time in the offensive zone. Not a whole lot of pressure. It's not always going to be that way, but we said it was going to be. Our own dressing room said it was going to be last Saturday, and we didn't live up to it. So the good news about this is the next day, you play an Edmonton team at 5 p.m., short rest. So is Edmonton, is also on short rest. I should note that. But you get a big win. You get a big win where Louis Domingue continues to make a case that he is going to be the team's backup in the Cup playoffs. Hard to argue against that. But you get the 2 points back. You didn't want to have one loss turn into two, and that can happen so often. You're just distraught from a game you put on a pedestal, and you come up short, that you let the next one, you know, become an extension of the first failure. So we get those 2 points, and then we play an all-important game on Tuesday against a red-hot Toronto team. Doesn't it seem like every team we play is red-hot? I know there was a departure from that, especially last night with the Islanders and how poor they've been for the last month. But we were on a run there where we're playing the Bostons and the Torontos and the Floridas and the Flyers, where it seemed like they're all on these mega winning streaks, Toronto, again, that it was nice to get a respite of a team that wasn't feeling pretty good about itself. As for Tuesday, Toronto, you can see why I'm scared of Toronto, I would think, if you watch especially those first two periods, right? It's a very tightly checked game until about the 10-minute mark of the first. Very much what you would expect to see out of a game that means a lot to both teams as we're inside the last dozen games of the season. But then Toronto's speed, Toronto's X's and O's acumen with head coach Mike Babcock, who is a wizard, and they've been on the come for a couple of years. You can see why they would be annoying, and even if we got through that series, and I would pick us to get through that series in the first round, you can see why they would be just an exhausting problem to have on the way to playing a team like Boston in the second round, because that's the only way this sequence works. You can't play Toronto and Boston unless you lose the division, which is why, again, I stress we got to win the division. Toronto had the puck, plain and simple. They just had the puck for a good 30 out of the first 40 minutes. We hang tight, and then, you know, I think a lot of the media looked to the goal that we scored early in the third period, the McDonagh goal, which is a beautiful shot. I mean, that's a bingo Bob puck-sized hole at the top left corner of the net. You old-timers know exactly what the hell I just meant. But it was the Hedman goal at the end of the second period that I think lifted the weight off of our shoulders. He's moving to his left, and he fires back to the right side of the net. All of a sudden, it's 3-1, and we're feeling pretty good about ourselves in the dressing room. Coach Cooper said it after the game, too. He noted that, you know, we're down 3-1, but there was a lot of confidence in the dressing room that we were going to get the job done. And so we did. After an effort on Saturday night where you're questioning whether or not we're going to peak at the right time, we respond to a major challenge against a really talented team on Tuesday. Make no mistake, Toronto is learning a lot of things right now. This is not their time. If I was doing a Joe Leafs fan, Blow Leafs Blow podcast, the expectations would be different. It's about, can we crash the party? That's where they are. They're on the way up. Their window is only opening. So we taught them a lesson of what it means to finish a game on Tuesday. But it was a lesson that we needed to teach ourselves, too, because we could have used those 2 points much more than Toronto. And we got them. A couple of observations from the past week. Andre Vasilevsky's game still needs to tighten up. He's not where he needs to be. He doesn't track the puck as well as he has in the early part of the season. The numbers bear that out. Sometimes the numbers can be deceiving, especially when we play so poorly in our defensive end. And even when that is true, independent of that, Vasi is having trouble tracking the puck. And also his rebound control is a little haywire. When Vasi is going at his best, there are a lot of whistles. There's a one-and-done element where he will just swallow the puck and not allow for these second chances. Right now, he's gone a little haywire with his rebound control. I don't know if he's working on something because he so consistently is deflecting pucks to the corner and the wall. There are some you can't get to as a goalie, and therefore you have to make the most of a low shot to the outside post and hope that you can kick it out to a forward or defenseman and get the transition going the other way. But there are others that are very stoppable shots where you should be getting a whistle, and he is not. He is clearly tired, and I do have a major concern that we have mishandled the Vasi situation. I think we might have played him too much, too soon. This is his first go-round experiencing this type of consistent workload. He may find it. I'm not saying it's a fait accompli that he's going to be average and one of the reasons we have an early exit. All I'm saying is it is very much on the radar that he needs to step back up to the form that put us in the position we were in the second half, you know, to win this division. But he has not been the reason that we are winning games as much as we are of late. That's the ebbs and flow of a season, though. It could be that, again, he's going through a little lull as he's learning how to be mentally tough through fatigue, and perhaps he can turn it on at the right time. We may be able to get out of a first-round series against a New Jersey or a Florida without him being at the top of his game. But make no mistake, in the next month, that's got to turn around, and it's not where it needs to be. Anthony Cirelli making the case. Man, I actually think it's an open and shut case. He's going to be on the playoff roster. He's too valuable. I thought it was a cute story, frankly, a few weeks ago with the Dallas win and 3 points and whatever amount of time. I said, good luck being that productive. Well, he continues to be with third and fourth line minutes. Now, on Tuesday night, he did play upwards of 17 minutes, somewhere around there. The kid makes really smart plays. I'm sure there's going to be a wall that he hits at some point. But when you're playing third and fourth line minutes, that means you're really not matching up against the best the other team has to offer. And he makes smart plays. He's a hound around the net. He has good vision. He has poise beyond his years. He's not a superstar type like a Jonathan Drouin or, you know, a Sergachev, where you see a young player come up to the NHL level and you say, well, that talent is just breathtaking. No, but he's really smart. He's elite in the way he is smart and makes sensible hockey plays, low-risk plays. And he's got skill to him, too. It's not like he's without skill. He also wins you faceoffs and he kills penalties. So I don't think there's any doubt that he's jumped Corey Conacher on the roster. Remember 89? We haven't seen very much of him. But Cirelli is still hanging around. He's playing a lot of minutes. That's an exciting development. Andre Palat, this is the one we've been waiting for, right? A top six forward is back in the fold, and he's one of your most defensively responsible forwards. Hopefully, the development of Cirelli and then the recuperation of Andre Palat is going to help our penalty kill. It's still not great. At some point, I need to look at Vasilevsky, though. Your goalie has to be your best penalty killer. And he's been less than the standard. Not just his elite standard, but we're looking at below average play right now in that moment, in that situation, too. So there's some negatives. There's some positives. The good news is we're still winning a blank ton of games while we're going through this process. We were at 106 points with 8 games to go. Boston is at 100 points. They have 10 games to go. What does that mean? Ah, well now, we're going to start counting down a division title magic number each week. And I'll keep a tab of it, and hopefully this number is much smaller this time next week. But I'm going to use a soundbite that we have from up here in Tallahassee. We used to do a weekly interview on the Jeff Cameron Show. You can go to ESPNTallahassee.com to hear that. We used to do a weekly interview with a guy named Kenny Knox, who's a former golf pro, one of the best putters in the PGA Tour in its history. But Kenny would come on and talk about, you know, the Masters, U.S. Open, Ryder Cup, whatever. And we always enjoyed the segment because Kenny just tells it like it is. But one day Kenny is doing this interview, and there's a big storm outside. And we thought we lost him. We thought Kenny died on the air because there was this loud lightning strike. Kenny offers up a whoo, and then we drop the phone call. He drops the phone call, and we don't hear from him for a couple of minutes. So we thought he was dead. He wasn't. He's good. This guy is fine. I don't think he gives a damn about hockey, and you probably, most of you out there, don't really care that much about golf. But the clip is great, and I'll play it for you right now. There it is. What more can you say? Some thunder and a woo. So what's the magic number with 8 games to go for the Bolts? The magic number is 15. Write that number down. 15. Combine any points we earn with any possible points that Boston forfeits from here to the end of the season. Once that number adds up to 15, we are happy campers. This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. Coming up next, a press availability from the captain that was alarming on Saturday night, and I think it speaks to the complacency issue that we have. We'll talk to you in a second.
Taking you higher than a Dave Mishkin go call. You're riding the lightning on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
Little Peter Gabriel on a Friday on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. Never hurt anybody. Want to hear a couple more seconds of it? Well, me too. Alrighty, let's get into some housekeeping, followed by a couple of positive notes, something that'll make you laugh. At least I hope so. Made me laugh my butt off last night when I was watching the Lightning and Islanders game. Subscribe to the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast at Google Play and iTunes. Subscribing is free, and you'll get an alert every time a new podcast posts. Hit the podcast button on your iPhone, search Joe Bolts, and it's right there. The Joe Bolts Fan Podcast is also on Player FM. More platforms are always going to be on the way. Be sure to leave a review at iTunes, especially because we love the feedback, especially 5-star feedback. That's what they write for me to say. You can leave feedback any kind you want. Anyway, let's get to a note from last night's game. This is just before the third period starts of our 7-6 win over the Islanders. Rick Peckham is the play-by-play guy, and he has been for a long, long time. And Brian Engblom is his partner for a few years now. Going back to the 90s when Rick started with the Lightning, my sister at the time, I've said this before, worked in the organization as the HR person. So she was cutting checks and direct deposits before there was, you know, an electronic form of direct deposit. So sometimes, you know, guys would come by and pick up their checks, the players or Rick or the chief. And I got to meet Rick on more than a few occasions as a youngster. She left the organization in the late 90s, so it's been years and years. Always been a super nice guy. Like, Rick is a really nice guy. The Chief is a legend, and he's the best, and everybody loves Chief, but Rick is a super nice guy. He has such an affinity for a few things, too, in the broadcast, if you watched over the years. If two players with the same number go into the corner, he can't not mention it. Every time, well, that's a good play by his opposite number. He also is obsessed with, you know, siblings that play in the NHL. He will talk about Jamie and Jordy Benn every single time one of them is on the ice. He'll talk about them 3 times a game. It gets annoying over the years, but I just love the quirks. And here is a little quirk that he doesn't give us much insight into all that often. But this is at the start of the third period last night. And if you heard it, you can laugh with me again. But this is some next level smack talk about the Brooklyn Nets. The Lightning had scored 7 goals on just 26 shots through 40 minutes last night. And here comes Rick Peckham with a left.
Second, Brian Engblom back with you, of course, the Barclays Center, home to the Brooklyn Nets of the NBA. And Brian, I think the Brooklyn Nets, with the kind of year they've been suffering through, might be happy with 7 for 26 shooting. That's what the Lightning have going so far here tonight.
Are you kidding me, Rick? That was awesome. That's a top five moment. You know, there's been a lot of classic moments. My boys from college, you know, Coffee, Tyler, Roth. We used to watch these games get together. When I first got to Florida State, I actually reached out to my friend Kevin, who I knew from high school, and he was a couple grades ahead. But I said, hey, do you still like the Lightning? And he welcomed me over to his house that night. We had a couple of pops. We watched the Lightning, and a tradition was born. But we had a lot of moments we would laugh over watching these games. One in which where Bobby the Chief Taylor says every time he dances, it rains in the middle of a broadcast. And Rick and the Chief couldn't contain themselves for about 5 minutes. This ranks up there. Rick, well done with the shade on the Brooklyn Nets. Why? I don't know either, but I like it. Another positive note before we get to the press availability from Steven Stamkos on Saturday. The last 9 minutes of this game, that's good stuff. I can understand why when you have a 4-goal lead in the third and you give up three and you have to hold on for dear life a little bit, you would be angry. However, again, I look at this differently. The Islanders are a really potent offensive team. Did we bring the intensity we needed to start the third period? No. But when it was down to a goal deficit and it was 9 minutes to go, you saw the type of close to a hockey game that we need to see. The Islanders were flying to the puck. They were playing physical. This is a team that is playoff caliber, but they just got lost in the last 6 weeks. I mean, they've just got completely lost in the shuffle. They have a lot of talent, and I'm sure there's going to be a referendum on the coaching staff come this offseason. A lot of distractions, too, about the Tavares contract, and I think that's creeping into the dressing room a little bit. They didn't make any moves. Garth Snow didn't at the trade deadline. But make no mistake, when they're playing at the highest level, they're one of the best offensive teams in the game, and they're dangerous on any given night. So with that said, in the last 9 minutes, we play lockdown hockey. I mean, I'm talking about get the puck out of our zone, get the puck in, cycle the puck. This is the way you close the game. And this is something I've been begging for weeks. So since I saw it, I don't care that we gave up 3 goals to get to that point. When it's 7-6, it's 7-6. And what do? We answered the bell. 100% played the game to win and close the game out the way you would expect a game to be closed out in the postseason. Kudos on that. That is probably the thing that makes me the most happy in this past week. It's not the 3-goal comeback or scoring 4 straight, but the 3-goal third period against Toronto on Tuesday night. Believe it or not, I want to see if we can close games. And that was the first indicator to me, albeit again, after you give up 3 to start the third period, that we're learning how to close games the way you need to in the postseason. Now, as for Saturday night and the post-game availability, I'll kind of take you along the ride as I experienced it, the Steven Stamkos post-game press conference. This is after a really disappointing effort, a 3-0 loss where Boston, for the bulk of the first half of this game, just completely outcompetes you in an inexcusable way, given you have more rest than they do. You said all the things in the papers about you care about this game and you're circling this game, and then Rick Bowness is talking to the media last week about, well, we're going to clean up some things defensively, and we're going to be more responsible in our own zone. Again, you would think that since we know exactly what's about to happen, we would be prepared for what's about to happen. We weren't. So in the post game after a 3-0 loss, here's Steven Stamkos, and the first statement he offers were, my eyebrows are raised.
You know, there's just been a lot of negativity around the team lately, so we just got to swing that and get some positive emotion in here. Have some fun again, and I think that's when we play our best.
Okay, so in that moment, I go, there's a lot of negativity. Well, we were just 9-1-1 in our last 11 games. You guys aren't feeling good about yourselves. There's negativity. What would that be about? I don't like a captain sounding defeated in the moment, but I will offer this up before we continue with the clips. I've covered a lot of different teams in my time in media here in Tallahassee, and I've seen some interesting moments in championship locker rooms, the BCS title game out in January 2014. I've seen dejected teams. It was out in the Rose Bowl a year later where Florida State gets absolutely pummeled by Oregon. I've seen basketball, baseball, I mean, you name it. Athletes that are younger, But I've seen them dejected. I've seen them as happy as can be. And so that can do something. You know, a 10-minute cool-off period in the flow of a postgame, sometimes it isn't enough for a player to collect his thoughts and then express something that we would expect them to express, especially when they're a collegiate athlete. But hell, even last year, with Joe Bucks fan, I made the trip up to Minneapolis and I covered the Bucks game in September, and the Bucks get their doors blown off in a game they thought they were going to win up in Minnesota. And that locker room, I mean, you could hear a pin drop in that locker room. So I can understand if maybe the words aren't coming out the way they need to, and if they look poor in the press. So when I first heard that comment from Stamkos, I said, well, a lot of negativity. Okay, well, he's feeling pretty down. Let's see where he goes from here. And then where he went from there, just listen.
You mentioned some negativity around the team. I know you guys went through a 9-0-1 stretch, so you guys were being successful. Was it mostly an internally thing, just guys trying to harp on getting better? And
well, I mean, it's internal, external. I mean, that's the bizarre thing. It's just you go 9-1-1 or whatever it was in that stretch, and you know we're getting asked about our defensive play. You know, we're shown clips about our defensive play. We're harping on each other in this room about our defensive play. So. I don't know if that's just a sign of a team that's hungry to want to get better, but at the end of the day, when you go 9-1-1 in this league, you know you should have some confidence and feeling good about your game. But you know, when the expectations and the standard is extremely high, like it is for this group this year, that you always want to get better, even when you're winning. So I think that crept in a little bit, but we'll look to just continue to work on the things that we need to get better at and just get back to having the confidence that we had for most of the year.
Run back that first part for me again. I didn't just hear what I thought I heard, did I?
That's the bizarre thing. It's just you go 9-1-1 or whatever it was in that stretch, and you know we're getting asked about our defensive play. You know, we're shown clips about our defensive play. We're harping on each other in this room about our defensive play. So I don't know if that's just a sign of a team that's hungry to want to get better, but at the end of the day, when you go 9-1-1 in this league, you know you should have some confidence and feeling good about your game.
Yeah, I'll have the chicken sandwich, hold the mayo, but I'll have a side of weak sauce, please. Steven, what the hell? No. This kind of commentary explains where complacency comes from. That's inexcusable. You're going to go that direction saying, we're 9-1-1 in our last 11 games, and you know we're being asked about our defensive play. Steven, most of those games go to shootouts, and a few others go to overtime, and we're playing loose in our own defensive end. We're playing without the level of consistency and the level of compete. Come on. This is the captain of the team complaining about being held to a higher standard when you're going 9-1-1? No, man. You know, what's really confusing about that commentary is that Stamkos has been all season long and through the stretch where he's complaining about negativity and internal external pressure, he's been one of our most responsible forwards in the defensive zone. He doesn't really take too many shifts off. I don't understand that mindset. I don't know that I could ever understand that mindset. I would understand that mindset a little bit more if it came from a prima donna, not a team captain. You know, John Cooper, Rick Bonus, in the week prior were talking about a commitment to our defensive zone. So what this tells me, when Steven complains about being shown clips about defensive zone responsibility, he's tired of the coaching staff continuing to harp on improvement in our own zone. That's not good enough. That's what Stamkos is saying. 9-1-1, the results, they're not good enough. No, stop that. That is weak. That is soft. You know that you can go 6-4 in a span of 10 games and play a hell of a lot better than the 9-0-1 when we went 10 games in a row with getting a point. I can't get down with that mindset. And I think for better or for worse, I now understand a little bit better when we go into lulls why we do. If that's the attitude, I mean, go back to the clip I played last week of John Cooper It's a question for the players. Hell, I'll play it here.
Was it a case of maybe you guys got a little overconfident when you 10-game point streak, 5-game win streak, you score that first goal early and you think maybe it's going to be easy?
Oh, good question for the players. That would have been.
You can see where, if there is going to be friction, where the friction comes from. It's right here. Stammer wants to be told how good the Lightning are. And I get it. We're setting franchise records. Cooper just tied Tortorella, I think it was, for the most wins all time and for a head coach in Lightning history. It's incredible already, right? Vasilevsky sets a single-season record for the Lightning. He's now over 40 wins for the season. That's beating Ben Bishop's record from the 2014-2015 season. So he's got the most individual wins in one season. And he ties Nikolai Hobby-Bullin last night, which I didn't realize. He ties Nikolai Hobby-Bullin for the second most wins of any Lightning goalie in franchise history. So the records are falling left and right. We may set a points record this year. We're going to set a wins record this year. All these things are right at the forefront. But you know that's not the same thing as what it takes and the standard required to go on a six-week run. Don't give me if we're 9-1-1, you know, we should be feeling better about our play. That's not what it's about. But I guess it's about a higher standard. Yeah, you're damn right it is. Get out of here with that. That can't be the culture. And again, it's just super confusing because of the way he's committed to playing a 200-foot game. I don't get what that is. Is he trying to be a mouthpiece for the locker room that feels like, hey, back off a little bit. We're going to be okay. I can somewhat understand the sentiment, but to express it in such a defeatist way, a captain has to be the person who is the strongest in the locker room, who has to hold everybody else to a standard, not let anything slip. It can't be what we just heard. He's learning. I mean, he's not a full-fledged veteran yet, I guess. But I just thought that was alarming. And I know we've answered with six straight points, but whew, hopefully we don't put ourselves in a position where there's a press conference like that again. Because if I'm Cooper or if I'm Yzerman, would Steve Yzerman ever comment like that? Well, you know, Scotty Bowman needs to just get off my back because we're 8-2 in our last 10. No, never. I know that's a negative note to end the podcast on, and I apologize because here we are on the brink of winning a division, and you know we're going to be one of the favorites. And we've tightened up some things in recent days that I think, you know, they lend themselves to maybe finishing the job here and playing our best hockey at the right time. But color me concerned about that particular element of the dressing room and then also Vasilevsky's play. Good news for us Bolts fans. We are in the driver's seat. We control our own destiny. Big game tomorrow night against another red-hot team. Stop if you heard that one before. But the Devils are playing really, really good hockey in New Jersey. And so we take on Brian Boyle and the Devils. A couple of games next week. Arizona, we do play. Boston's on the docket next week. So there's an awful lot riding on another week. And by the time we get to the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast next Friday, March the 30th, we'll know a hell of a lot more about where we stand in the division and whether or not we're on the brink of sewing this thing up. Either way, make sure you subscribe on iTunes and Google Play and join us for the ride, right? We've clinched a playoff berth. We're likely ticketed to go at least to the second round, and if not, much, much deeper. So let's go on this ride together. Thanks for listening to the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. My name is Tom Lang. We will talk again next week, and I hope you all have a safe and happy springtime weekend.